Good evening.
Hello, good evening.
How are you today?
Well, I worked with a lady from 10 to 2 and with Hebrew and catching her up. She was new to the synagogue and she was born Jewish but didn't really have a Jewish background.
Right.
And then I've been fooling with the computer. But I think Geek Squad solved the problem. I really won't know, you know, until I work a little bit with it. They did a tune-up. And then that error message, I had to stay with the computer so I could see what they did. They went into Windows and just about erased everything and then, what would you call it, reinstall and updated and that kind of thing. So it was over 2 hours. So. Hopefully that was good. With their contract, they do that once a month, up to once a month. I usually do it about every 2 months. But it's a good service, and it's $77 a year, which isn't really that bad. And they'll do up to 3 computers in a household, which, you know, I just do that one. But so that's Best Buy.
Understand. I'm going to get off the phone and then come back on, and then we can start the class.
Okay.
Is it just you?
Well, as far as I know.
Okay. I'll be back in a minute.
Okay.
Good evening.
Okay.
Are you able to hear me all right?
I'm sorry, what?
Are you able to hear me all right?
Yes, I can. I don't think anybody else came on because the music, you know, came in and I didn't hear any beeps. No one said anything.
I'm just, I'm happy to use another phone and it's really a very soft voice. I'm trying to... please join me with saying the Anabakoa.
Oha Gedula Chimincha Tati Sera Alephet Gimel Yud Tat Sadi Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagvenu Taharenu Dora Sufre Shayan Sintet Nun Nagibor Dorshe Hudha Kivavat Shamren Nun Gimel Dalad Yud Kaf Shin. The letters of the month of Kislev, the Gimel that created the planet Tzedek, the planet Jupiter, planet of righteousness, and the Samech that created the constellation Keshet, the astrological sign of Sagittarius. Together, the Samech and the Gimel have a gematria of 63, which connects us to the energy store of the Sephirah of Bina. Barchem tacharem rachamei sitkatcha tamid gamlem tetet resh tzaditach gimel pasin kadosh v'rom tuvcha na'el adata et kufet at Nunayan. Yachid ge'e lamcha p'nei zokrei kedushata. Het kufet at Nunayan. Yachid ge'e lamcha p'nei zokrei kedushata. Yud Gimel Lamed, Pei Zayin Kuf. Shavatenu Kabel, Ushma Tziyakatenu, Yodea Talumo. Shin Kufav, Sadi Yud Taf. We brought the energy of creation into our space, and now we will separate between the right column energy and the left column energy, between the positive and the negative aspects of this creation. And we'll use the 13 attributes of mercy for this purpose. Adonai Yohei Wahei, Adonai Yohei Wahei, El Rachum Vepanim, Erech Apaim v'rav chesed v'emet notzer chesed l'alafim noseyawon wafesha v'chata'a v'nakei. And the eighth verse of the Anabakoh we will say in a whisper. Today's class is the our advanced reincarnation class. You can find the handout on the Revealed Wisdom matrix. And it's in row 11, the second column from the left. When you click on that link, then scroll down to Class 6B, Chapter 2, Section 7. And this is titled the Yibum, a special case. The Yibum is the
unusual situation where a man dies without children, and his brother needs to marry his widow in order for his soul to be brought back into the earth in the, as the baby from that union. That's what we will be discussing tonight. Within the concept of Gilgulim, reincarnation, there is a distinction between reincarnation into any body that may be ready for his Gilgul, and reincarnation through a brother, which is the sod, the secret of Yibum. Yibum is the Levirate marriage in which a surviving brother marries his widowed sister-in-law, whose husband, the man's brother, has died childless. In a normal Gilgul, the Nefesh, the Ruach, and the Neshama do not reincarnate together, or even two at once. Only the Nefesh reincarnates until it is rectified. Afterwards, in another Gilgul, the Nefesh and Ruach return together until they are rectified. When that occurs, then the entire Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama reincarnates together until the Neshama is rectified, which completes his Gilgulim. Or sometimes, each of the three reincarnates individually and achieves tikkun independent of the others. The Ruach with another Nefesh in another body, and the Neshama with a different Nefesh and Ruach, a different body. However, when a man reincarnates through his brother, the entire Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama, they do so together. Rabbi Chaim Vital says, it seems from the Saba of Mishpatim that even with respect to Yibum, all three do not come back together, but only the Nefesh and the Ruach without the Neshama, and this requires further investigation. Now, my commentary on that discussion is to realize why would a person die childless? What is the tikkun of that situation? And it would imply that person has not yet developed their neshama. They haven't reached that spiritual level. And that's why they can die childless. But if someone has reached the level where he's corrected the nefesh and the ruach, and he now has his neshama, it's my opinion that he would not need to die childless. He would not need to have that situation. And that is the end of the introduction for Chapter 2. My written commentary. The Yibum is a subject that the Zohar spends a lot of words discussing. The Yibum is spelled Yud Bet Mem, which comes from the Shorash that means in them or in her. And this is easy to understand since the meaning becomes an active in her because she becomes pregnant with the soul of her dead husband. This is the reincarnation mechanism to return a man who passes without children. In today's world, it is almost never done. Approximately 2,500 years ago, the rabbis modified the option since people had fallen so far spiritually that they could not maintain the proper consciousness when mating with their sister-in-law to bring their brother's soul back through her. And I find this ritual very intriguing, probably because I never had a brother, so it was never a mitzvah that I could do. that's the end of this this particular chapter, and now we are going to go to the Advanced Reincarnation Class 6C. And this is Chapter 3, Section 1, the Ibur while alive. And to remind you all, an Ibur means a pregnancy. And how is the pregnancy in dealing with reincarnation? It's because this, when someone is born, they get a soul, various levels of soul, depending on how they grow spiritually. But there are also other souls that don't need to be born into a body. They will join with you or another body and soul, and they will assist that soul in achieving certain tikkunim that they need to fix. And then there's another level of righteous people who come to assist, just to assist. An Ibur takes place during a person's lifetime, as we have already mentioned. In Chapter 2, Section 3, it was written, there will reincarnate into the body of this person while he is still alive the nefesh of a righteous tzaddik. This is called Ibur, and more specifically, Ibur while alive. The difference between this type of Ibur and Gilgul was also explained in Chapter 2, Section 3. Normally, Ibur takes place during a person's lifetime. It involves parts of soul that come to a person years after he is born. Gilgul, on the other hand, involves parts of soul that a person is born with. They reincarnate from the time he is born, and they stay with him until the end of his lifetime. Later on in this chapter, there will be introduced a new concept of an Ibur from birth, and it will be explained there. God willing, when we come to it, the subject of this section, however, is the normal type of Ibur. Sometimes a certain mitzvah may come before a person, and he performs the mitzvah as it should be done. At that point, the nefesh of an earlier righteous person who had performed this same mitzvah correctly will join the person as an Ibur, since they are alike with respect to this mitzvah. Thus, the actual mitzvah to be performed affects which righteous soul will join a person as an Ibur. Now we are learning that the Ibur can even come from a living righteous individual. Not only this, but it is also possible that the righteous person is alive during his lifetime, and still an Ibur can occur. The one who performed the mitzvah and the righteous person are alive at the same time, and still the Ibur can occur. Thus, if a person performs a particular mitzvah or mitzvot relevant to a righteous individual who also performed correctly, then the nefesh of that righteous tzaddik can enter the person even while they are both alive at the same time. My commentary. How can this be? It is because there are 613 parts of each level of soul. So one part of a soul becomes an Ibur, and the other 612 parts of the soul remain as a Gilgul in the original body. I hope that's clear. You'll understand. We have different parts of our body, and therefore we have different parts of our soul. No, I'm not talking that.
Okay.
In the Neshama, that level of soul, there are 613 parts. So when we go to sleep at night, if we happen to have corrected one part of that soul that day, that soul does not return with the rest of the souls. And as we correct enough of those parts, all of a sudden we no longer feel right being called by the name we've been called all of our lives. And we start to look for a different name. A good example is a child who's called Bobby when his name is Robert. And then as he gets older, he says, I don't want to be called Bobby anymore. My name is Bob. And then as he gets a little older and gets involved with business, he says, I need to be called Robert. He is relating to the fact that he has corrected various parts of his soul, so that his name, which is always a metaphor for his soul, he has to reflect that. Continuing to read. Up until now, we knew that the Yibur occurred in a living body after birth, but with the soul of a righteous person who has already died. Now we are learning that the Yibur can even come from a living righteous citizen. This is the secret meaning of the verse. The nephesh of Jonathan became attached to the nephesh of David. In other words, even while they were both alive, the nephesh of David was joined with the Jonathan as an Ibur. My unwritten commentary, just to give you background, Jonathan is the son of Saul. David is the new king usurping Saul's kingship. Not usurping it, but we don't have a word to really explain the relationship, because Saul had lost the kingship due to his negative actions, and David has been appointed the new king, but has not yet earned that right to be the king as long as Saul lived. And David had many chances to kill Saul, but he knew that to kill a king is a very highly negative action. So he didn't do it. He waited till Hashem took him out of the world in his own way. But Jonathan, who would become the next king if Saul had not made those mistakes, Jonathan and David became very close, like brothers. And in today's world, the homosexual community, the gay and lesbian communities, often speak of the relationship as a homosexual relationship between Jonathan and David. They say that. It's not true, but that's what they say because that's their agenda. They want to feel that it's correct for them. So they look into the Bible and they use that. But here we're being taught something really very, very unique that they don't understand. The reason for the closeness of the soul is parts of Jonathan's soul that had done certain misdeeds in earlier lifetimes transferred and became an Ibur in David's soul, to help David do those same mitzvot. That's what the Ari teaches us. That's what we've been reading from this book, the Sha'arei Gilgulin. And this is what explains the soul, the strong soul bond between people. Rabbi Chaim Vital, who recorded these words, says, it appears that one mitzvah performed correctly is enough to initiate the Ibur. It is not required that he have performed all mitzvot to this point. And this gives you a different understanding of what is a tzaddik. A tzaddik is a person, a soul part, who has performed the mitzvah properly, so that throughout all of his gilgulim, he no longer needs to do that mitzvah. And that's, in my opinion, is an explanation for why so many secular Jewish people are alive in this world, having died in the Holocaust, being been reincarnated, but through the action of those deaths, became tzaddikim, and achieved many mitzvot just by virtue of having died in that way. And that's also because the rabbis don't study Kabbalah. They don't see all of these interconnections. That's why we're studying this, to help us understand that. Go ahead. I'm sorry? The soul of your father never dies.
I know that. Would he be reincarnated?
Yes. Yes, he was reincarnated. Of course not. You would not know who. We never know who the next incarnation is. Only a Kabbalist who is able to. Well, he's able to go into the upper courts and to hear what the sentence was. So when your father's soul went to that court, his final judgment court, and he was told he was being reincarnated, and what is his reasons for it, is they know which parents he's choosing, because your father would choose new parents. And by doing that, only the Kabbalists would know that, and then he would be told not to reveal it, because it's not necessary to understand where he would go. The other, another aspect of to understand the Holocaust a little more. In the world of the Second World War in Europe, there was great chaos. Everybody will agree with that. That chaos is the work of Satan. Satan is given permission to do that great chaos, for whatever reason. We're not going to go into that. But he's also given permission to do great chaos in the world of reincarnation. So he can take a soul who really belongs in a Jewish home, Jewish parents, Jewish body, and give them to another family as part of the same chaos that was on the earth at that time. He could do that as part of the reincarnation world, frame of reference. And so that's why you have so many people who are now seeking out to find their Jewish roots, because their souls are Jewish, and they were put in homes that are not their home. And that's all part of the system that we have to overcome in order to bring the Shia.
Yes. Is there a time that's heard
I'm sorry? Right. Oh, yeah. That period was from the end of, from 1939 until 1960, 62, 63. In that period, all of the Jewish people essentially died during the Holocaust and then reincarnated. Before the Holocaust, there was approximately 13 million Jews in the world. And today, 18 million. And today, there's approximately 15 million Jews, 13 to 15 million Jews in the world. And the other 3 million are people who did not need to reincarnate. It's just a way of understanding it. This is my opinion. That it's not that anybody knows for sure, but it's just, if you understand the principles of the spiritual system, it makes sense. If they have completed their tikkun. The last paragraph of this section is my commentary that I have not yet read. Up to this point, we are not being told why this soul relationship happens. What is its purpose? The question I am asking. Obviously, the Ibur supports the Gilgul in the doing of some other action. The reason for the two souls to bond is due to the one mitzvah that they both did separately. This brings them together for another purpose. The effect of the sin of Adam is such. Chapter 3, Section 2. With respect to the concept of Gilgulim, we will begin the discussion with Adam HaRishon, the first man, to more easily grasp the matter. To begin with, when Adam HaRishon sinned, he blemished all the sparks, the nitzitzot, of his nefesh, ruach, and neshama. Just like a person's body contains many sparks throughout his 248 limbs and 365 tendons, and consequently there are many sparks in his head, in his eyes, and in every limb. It is the same with the nefesh as well. The human body is comprised of the 248 limbs and 365 tendons, and as such, they denote the form or shape of the human body. The body is composed of holy sparks dispersed throughout it and within its limbs. The nefesh is in the same shape as the human body. More correctly said, the human body is in the same shape as the nefesh. The body is composed of holy sparks that are dispersed throughout it and within every one of its limbs. It is exactly the same with the nefesh, only it's more ephemeral, more spiritual. When Adam HaRishon, the first man, sinned, he blemished all the sparks throughout the spiritual form of his nefesh and his ruach and his neshama as well. To explain this, the Arizal now digresses to a deep explanation of the Midrash. In the Midrash Tanchuma and the Midrash Rabbah, they provide an explanation for the verse from Job. Where were you when I founded the earth? Job is complaining about his lot and arguing with God. He answers him, where were you when I founded the earth? God is asking Job. In other words, God is answering Job that he has no right to question God unless he also knows from what part of the soul of Adam the spark that constitutes Job's soul originally came. If he does not know from where his soul was hewn, then he does not know his own history, and consequently, he can never fully understand the things that are happening to him. This world, the world of perfect cause and effect. The cause is always spiritual, the effect is always physical. We perceive the world as unjust, as we don't know the history. We don't know what the soul part did in a previous incarnation, that he needs to experience what he is experiencing. We're seeing a lot of people who have been convicted incorrectly, unjustly, for murder or mayhem or whatever. And now that DNA science, they're being released. The issue is, they were put in jail for something they did in a previous life. And that jail was to last 22 years, 14 years, 10 years, different lengths for different souls. Once that was reached, the DNA test proved them innocent and they're released. But people don't understand that because they don't think in terms of reincarnation.
So you're saying that it is
They were, even though they were not guilty for the crime in this lifetime, they needed to be incarcerated for X number of years from the court, the spiritual court. And so therefore they experienced being found guilty in this lifetime, even though they were innocent in this lifetime. But they were not innocent from a previous incarnation. And understanding that helps people to accept what happens to them as coming from God. And that's the important aspect that people need to learn. Where anything that happens in your life was coming from God. Not that, and I know this is a painful discussion for you, but this is the way the spiritual system works. And knowing the truth will help you understand and come to grips with what actually took place. For this gentleman, yes. For others, no. For others, if you were born in that period I mentioned, from 1939 to 1960 plus, you died in the Holocaust. What was that experience? What was that cleansing? And now you look at what happened to the world since 1950. The economies of the world became much better. Physical life became easier. Spiritual life hasn't changed because people are still attracted to the physical pleasures and not doing the spiritual work. That's why Kabbalah is being taught in this generation. I'm continuing to read. When Adam was created, the Holy One, blessed be He, showed him every righteous person who would ever descend from him. Actually, the Midrash starts off by quoting a verse from Ecclesiastes. That which was, it was already called by name from the beginning, and it is known that it is Adam. In other words, all that exists was already called by name from the beginning, and that beginning or source is Adam HaRishon, when he was created. When Adam was created, the Holy One, blessed be He, showed him every righteous person who would ever descend from him, from his head, from his hair, from his neck, from his two eyes, and some from his nose. His Ruach is also divided in this way, as is his Neshama. From the sparks that comprise all the various limbs of the Nefesh, the Ruach and the Neshama of Adam, were descended the souls of all the people that would exist throughout history. When he sinned, he blemished the majority of the sparks of his Nefesh, his Ruach, and his Neshama, causing them to become immersed in the Klipot, the shells. The Klipot are the husks or shells that imprison the fallen holy sparks. When Adam sinned, the holy sparks of his Nefesh, his Ruach, and his Neshama fell into the Klipot. In the sense in which it is being used here, the concept of Klipot refers to the entire realm of evil, into which the souls of the divine presence have been exiled. This realm is the mirror image of the realm of holiness, Kedusha, but in the depths of spiritual inward. The divine presence is exiled amongst the Klipot. This is the Sod, the secret of what is written in the Sefer HaTikkunim, chapter 5, on the verse, like a bird that wanders from her nest. The divine presence is exiled amongst the Klipot. The souls of the righteous Tzaddikim wander after her from place to place. This is talking about a quality naturally inherent in a human being that allows him to return to his Creator, as a bird does to its nest. The deeper meaning of the verse refers to soul sparks of righteous people pursuing God while they are within the realm of the Klipot. The place to which the sparks are exiled in the realm of the Klipot is according to the aspect of the soul of Adam, from which that spark has come. If they have come from the head, then they are exiled into the head of the Klipot. If from the eyes, then to the eyes, etc. This is the soul, the secret of the idea of the exile of the soul that is mentioned there. As explained, the spiritually impure world is a mirror version of the spiritually pure world, except in an unholy and impure way. Thus, when the souls fell into the world of impurity, they fell to the level that corresponded to their own. For example, the souls that are derived from the sparks of the eyes of Adam's Nefesh fell into the Klipot of the eyes of the Nefesh. If they fell from the thighs of the Ruach, then they fell into the thighs of the Ruach of the Klipot. It is from their specific place of exile in the Klipot that the soul sparks must be redeemed. Translator's note. The Hebrew words that have been translated here, when Adam was created, are mutual golem. The implication of the word mutual is that he was lying around lifeless. The word golem will be more familiar from the stories of the creature that was made by the Maharal of Prague. Let me finish the paragraph. Whereas God breathed into the lifeless lump that was Adam, the spirit of life, the Maharal imbued the spirit of life into a lifeless lump by the use of holy divine names. What's the question? No, it was from where's Prague? In Czechoslovakia, yes.
And he was laying.
He was in
the synagogue today. He still exists.
Correct.
And city was created by the rabbi.
Yes.
Thomas.
He has the letters Aleph Mem Tet Ha on his forehead.
And he descended to his...
He was created for the purpose of protecting the Jewish people of Prague during the 16th century.
Yes.
And during the Second World War, the question is, where was he? But it was because God said, this is what needs to happen.
But it still exists. It still exists.
I don't think that original golem still exists. Okay, that's the story your father told you, I assume.
No, they told that.
Okay. I'm not arguing, but in my studies, there's a book called the Sefer Yetzirah that teaches the techniques of how to create a golem. But people are not pure enough. The techniques, I know I teach the techniques, but how to create that takes a very pure soul. Yes. Let us continue and finish this section. Thus, the literal translation of the Midrash at this point is as follows. When Adam was a lifeless, unformed lump, concerning that time it is written, and the Lord God formed the man out of the dust from the ground, and he breathed into him a living soul. It was at that moment also, according to our Midrash, that God manifested the potential of all of the human souls for posterity that would be descended from Adam, the primordial man. The verse quoted by the Midrash from the book of Job is, where were you when I founded the earth? The Hebrew word for where is Epho, comprised of the letters Aleph, Yud, He, and He. The Midrash notes that these letters can also be read as Epha, and Epha is an amount of dough that has not yet been kneaded into the shape of a loaf that will be baked. Therefore, the verse, when it is read with the indication, the hint, Epha, also hints at this moment when Adam was a lifeless lump, like an Epha. This is the moment when God gives form and life to the lifeless lump and manifests the potential souls of the entire human race, the moment when Adam was created. My commentary. Above it refers to a midrash that speaks of the bird's nest. In the Zohar, it speaks of the bird's nest as the location where the soul of the Mashiach waits. It also hints to the reality teaching that in order to complete one's tikkun, in order to complete one's tikkun, one must know the soul root from which they come within Adam and Chava. Without that information, it is impossible to know what one did incorrectly in their last incarnation. Most of a person's life is spent searching for this information. There are three shortcuts taught within the frame of Kabbalah. One is Hebrew astrology, two is faith in palm reading, and three, knowledge of the races of angels. Actually, all three tools are necessary to find the complete answer. I do teach all three tools, along with Hebrew meditation techniques, that is needed to utilize the above three tools. That's the end of this section. It's the end of our class for tonight. Does anybody have any questions?
When do you think the Mashiach?
When you're ready.
Hmm?
When you're ready.
Will he come?
Yes. He will come. He may come as technology, or he may come as a human being, but he will come. And the question is, when will he come? When you are ready. When I am ready. When people are ready. When the knowledge of the teachings of the Baal Shem Tov have spread throughout the world. Not chassidus. One simple teaching. It's the classes I taught from the book, You Are Who You Hate. The teachings of the Baal Shem Tov, explaining how if you meet somebody you don't like, it's because that person has a spark of your soul that you need to redeem from him. That's where the animosity generates. When all of the soul sparks have found their way back to the proper human being and have been elevated to their proper locations in the heavens, that's when Mashiach will manifest. Or until the 6,000th year, and that will be the war of Armageddon, God forbid. And we are striving to spread this wisdom so there won't be that war.
Here in America, the Jewish Federation, and that's the next belief in you. That is a fact.
We wouldn't argue with that.
And ours, and they are redeemed the soul, if they don't believe in it on the system.
That's why we need to have Kabbalah spread.
It's a complicated.
It is. It is.
In the generation that happened, my parents.
It happens in many, but it's happened many times before.
Yes.
The history repeats itself.
Why is it, since the beginning, the Jews have been persecuted time and time and time and again?
Because they don't do their work. When they're not doing their work, they get persecuted. We get persecuted. And it's happening again. You'll see it in this country one more time in the next. God forbid. No, that's not correct. Because there is a payment. There is a benefit that we don't see, but we will see. On the conference call, are there any questions?
No questions. Thank you. No questions.
Any questions on the conference call?
No, thank you.
All right. You have a beautiful evening, and we'll have the other class at 7 o'clock West Coast time. We'll have a Zohar class.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.